This is the Popmatic Podcast for March 16th, 2016.
I'm gonna put a hole in my TV set. I don't wanna grow up.
This is the Popmatic Podcast, where you can rock out with your library card out. I am Brian, and joining me today are...
Jeremy.
Bill.
Amanda.
Mikey.
And Clem Marie.
Clem Marie!
Ooh, it's a new person.
There's another girl.
Whoa.
I'm not alone.
No, you're not alone.
All the tea parties we'll have.
I don't like tea. I prefer coffee.
Oh, yeah. Word.
Yes.
Clem Marie, what do you do at the library?
I work with Bringing Books to Life, which is a preschool literacy outreach program. So we work with kids, their parents, their families, and teachers, because we want kids to be excited about stories and excited about books. So when they go to kindergarten, they are ready and excited to learn to read.
And those special unicorn children, some of them will grow up to be librarians.
Yes, they will, unbeknownst to them, probably.
My child is
good luck, kids.
How's it going, little Melville?
So this is your first podcast, so we're going to be mean to you.
Okay.
No, we won't be mean to you.
I'll prepare my heart then.
They'll just be mean to me.
They'll be mean to you in lieu of her. Yeah. So I want her to come back.
Oh, you don't want me to come back?
You keep coming back.
The gloves come off!
She definitely doesn't want to keep being the only girl.
That's right.
You keep coming. I'll wear a dress by then.
Video podcast.
Yeah. I'll do it. Whatever. I'm game.
You probably had tea parties.
Yeah. Whatever.
With a child, you've had tea parties.
Yes. I had a kid?
Yes.
Yeah. My kid was wearing rainbow-colored leopard print sweatpants on Saturday.
Okay.
And he's a boy.
And it's appropriate that you're here today, Clem Marie, because today's show is going to be about kids' stuff that also works for adults.
Yes.
And we're doing this because our favorite podcaster, Jeremy, though we express our love for him in immature ways, is very excited that there's another Netflix property coming out.
Pee-wee's Big Holiday.
Pee-wee's Big Holiday coming out.
This Friday.
I didn't know it was on Netflix. Yeah. Oh, this is exciting. Yeah. I don't have to go anywhere to watch it.
I believe it's the 18th. And the 18th of March.
Of all the many, kids shows that work maybe even better for adults. There was, what was the actual name of the show?
Pee-wee's Playhouse.
Pee-wee's
Playhouse.
And it has a Nashville connection, too, because artist Wayne White did a lot of the design and painting, and he was also the voice of... not Billy Baloney, but Randy, the puppet Randy. And he attended school here, lived here, worked at the Adventure Science Center when it was the Cumberland Science Center. Is that what it was called? Do you know, Bill?
No.
No, you know?
Bill stopped listening from a minute ago.
Anyway, he's a Tennessee native and former Tennessee resident.
And you can see his early work on the old Pee-wee show. But today, kid stuff, also good for grown-ups. Jeremy.
Yeah.
Want to go first?
Sure. I had something prepared, but I can't find my notes, guys. It's lost in a big chaotic scene filled with knights and witches and gnomes.
How will we find 12 tangents to go through?
I don't know. I can't find any tangents to go on. And there's all kinds of red and white stripes that are throwing me off the scent. So that was the joke that I was going to lead off with so I could talk about Where's Waldo? So I didn't see these books when I was a little kid. I think I was maybe a tween or a young teenager when I first saw them. But by the time I saw them, my brother had them, and I was kind of already in the thrall of like Stephen King books and extreme 90s superheroes. But my brother had one of these books, and I was sort of like, wow, this is really amazing. And so I spent some time with old Waldo.
Finding Waldo.
Yeah, it's a great activity. He's known, Waldo is known as Wally in his native England and was created by artist Martin Hanford. And actually, around the world, Waldo is given names that are more appropriate to the region because Waldo is with,
yeah. Does it like, translate does, to yeah. like Sweden? Yeah.
I don't know why we got Waldo.
Yeah. That seems more quaintly British than Wally.
Exactly. Yeah, Wally seems like Wally and the Beeve. Like, what's more American than that? But apparently British publishers don't know that. So
that's what they think America
is. That's what they think America, yeah.
Where's Wallace?
Where's Wallace? Wallace Simpson, right? Am I right?
She was American.
Yes. Nailed it.
She had the relationship with the British man. So yes, that's your connection.
Duke of Buckingham.
Yes.
All right.
Cost him a king, but that's yes.
Yeah, well. He really never regretted that.
Hey guys, what about my tangents?
We're filling in the tangents for you.
So old Martin Hanford borrowed some elements from Hillary Knight's book, Where's Wallace, from 1964.
Whoa, all right. I get partial credit.
Yeah, in which readers had to find an orangutan hidden in crowded panoramic pictures. So it's basically the same book, but much like the Larry Potter controversy, I believe the similarities in there, looking for a dude in a striped shirt is just more engaging than finding an orangutan, and plus there are tons more of these books. There are 7 books in the main series and then other ancillary books with stickers, posters, puzzles, maps, a comic strip, cereal box art, video games, and a Saturday morning cartoon.
I was going to bring that up, yes. There's a Saturday morning cartoon.
I don't think I ever watched that.
And there's only like one part at the end where they're like, look at this, kids. Can you find Waldo? And then you get like 30 seconds to go. Like, he's over there.
I wanted to watch it, but I couldn't find it. Fun fact, Martin Hanford created the cover art for The Vapors' 3rd album, Magnet, which did not feature the band's signature song, Turning Japanese, but is the band that did Turning Japanese. So I rediscovered these Waldo books because I have a kid. And kids make you look for things that you've lost all the time, like your hair and your dignity and your youth. So as a dad and a library guy, I'm always looking for books to take home to my son. Looking for books that he will like. And I don't mind spoiling him with books because I don't think you can do that.
Bad dad.
Yeah.
Books.
Yeah. I did buy him some dots at the grocery the other day, and I shouldn't have done that because he didn't need any candy. But he did need some books. So I also bought him marbles, too, because we live in 1954.
Yeah, really? Wow.
Then we
went to the malt shop.
Yeah.
That was swell.
Yeah. He did. Yeah. He was like, gee, Paw, thanks. So our Waldo journey began with another book called Pablo and Jane and the Hot Air Contraption by Jose Domingo. And this is a combination comic book and Waldo-style search book in which readers have to help Pablo and Jane look for all these missing parts for this hot air contraption so they can escape this alternate dimension. It's really cool. The art was really amazing, and that's kind of what drew me to it. I saw it on a shelf and thought, this is cool. I'll take this home. And my son was kind of slow to warm to it. I really thought he would get into it, and he didn't. But then one day I couldn't pry it from his cold, dead hands.
Your son died?
Your son died? Was this before or after the sweatpants?
Oh, he's supposed to swallow the marble.
My son is, I just dug up, what's his name, Charlton Heston, and called him my son. So because he was so into this, book, I had an epiphany. I thought, oh, my God, where's Waldo? Of course. I brought it home, and he was immediately hooked. And then I realized, like, oh, my God, I'm hooked on this, too. This is so much fun. So now, like, we sit and look at the book together. We went to the oil change place on a rainy day before bedtime. And he's like, hey, Papa, you want to look for Waldo? And I'm like, sure, let's do it. So I've had to threaten to take them away from him because in the mornings he won't get ready for school, or he won't, you know, go brush his teeth or whatever. And that doesn't work. Because he just gets lost in these pages. And he has become very adept at searching for things. Almost always finds Woof's tail. That's Waldo's dog. Mm-hmm. The tail is the only thing that's visible of the dog. And it's always like hidden behind a barrel or something. And it's this tiny little sliver of red and white. And he could always find it before me. And I think it's because his eyeballs are smaller. But
he cheats.
Yes. I'm pretty good at finding Wizard Whitebeard for reasons that our listeners won't understand. So my son has been reading actual words in books for a few months now. And these books have very little text in them, so like he doesn't get discouraged by – he doesn't really get discouraged when he's reading anyway. Toot, toot, my own horn for my son. But he doesn't get bogged down in words that he doesn't understand. He doesn't have to worry about what's going on because everything about the book is in the title. Find this guy. That's all you got to do. And the thing that I like about it is that each page, it's like the whole panoramic thing – tells one big story, but also you can kind of start at the top and then move around, and it's like dozens or hundreds of stories. Like, just you really can get lost in this little world, and it's the same thing that I like about comics. It's like if you're into it and you're enjoying it, it kind of creates the illusion of movement, and like you actually go into this other world, and it's like an immersive experience that offers something new each time you pick it up. It's been over 20 years since I first beheld the wonder of Waldo, but it holds up, and I would recommend it for children of all ages.
Look in your copy before you check it out, because my sister would buy them from like McKay's and stuff, and the previous readers had circled.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. I got one of those from the library. Bad patron.
Yeah.
I need to try to see if I can erase that without doing any damage. But yeah. But it was pencil, so it wasn't as obvious.
That's not as bad. Yeah. The one I remember was
big
like
black marker.
Yeah, that's when I was like, "Why would you?"
We had to ruin the fun.
Yeah,
record for everyone.
I found Waldo. I'm done.
Yeah, where's the trash can?
What outlaw?
You were confused. That was actually like the cheat code book.
For those of us that are
the Game Genie version of Where's Waldo.
Oh, well, I hacked my dentist someday.
Bill.
Okay, in fairy tales, witches always wear silly black hats and black cloaks, and they ride on broomsticks. But this is not a fairy tale. This is about real witches. So begins the children fantasy novel The Witches by Roald Dahl. Roald Dahl has written many memorable children's books, James the Giant Peach, Matilda, Fantastic Mr. Fox, and the BFG. The BFG has been adapted to the screen by Steven Spielberg for a 2016 release starring Mark Rylance. I'm really looking forward to it. I've just got to find a time that it's an adult-only showing.
Like midnight?
Yeah, that would be cool. I would be happy with that. Dahl's children's stories are extremely dark, which features adult enemies, unsentimental stories, and the macabre, which is probably why I'm drawn to them. The Witches, in particular, is a favorite of mine. The basic story deals with a young boy and his Norwegian grandmother in a world where child-hating evil witches secretly exist. Supposedly, Dahl's mother was Norwegian and told Dahl folklore tales when he was young, which influenced his stories and storytelling. I love The Witches because it's unrelenting in its storytelling and uncompromising. The illustrator of the book is Quentin Blake, who did a lot of the Dahl books. Also, Nicholas Rogue filmed the book or the movie in 1990. I enjoyed the movie, but I always kind of think they copped out at the end. Huh. So to end this, I'm going to end with a trivia question. Roald Dahl was good friends with Ian Fleming, famous for the James Bond series. What James Bond film did Roald Dahl write the screenplay for?
Oh, that's a good question.
James Bond and the Great Glass Elevator?
No. I grew up with a lot of James Bond because my dad loves James Bond.
Uh-huh. Thunderball?
No.
No, wait. No. Covered that.
So can you give us a hint, like which James Bond actor?
Sean Connery,
okay.
You know twice.
That's it.
Oh!
Way to go.
I'm getting my Jeopardy now.
Uh-huh. That is an excellent question. I'm going to go to my father with
that's
that.
That's cool.
Yeah. Ian Fleming gave him the idea to this Dahl's famous adult short story of Lamb to the Slaughter. They were eating lamb, and this is rather tough. And he,
Ding, ding.
Wow.
And Ian Fleming wrote Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. Coincidence?
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's like 6 degrees of downward spiral.
I'm not talking about either of those today.
I'm talking about bed knobs and broomsticks.
Keep in mind. Yeah, it's a candlestick and whatever. When I was a kid, I couldn't wait to grow up. Adults had it all. They could drive, they could leave the house, and make this money, and not have to go to school, and get this job and something that they love until they die, which was soon because they're old. It sounded like the best. I was like really eager to experience things that I was, say, not really ready for. Like, one of my earliest memories is in kindergarten when I had a free read, when we had like free reading time where we just test our newfound reading skills with Dick and Jane and their fondness for spots. I brought my dad's 150-page Doctor Who novelization of the Five Doctors. Could I understand it? Nope. I didn't understand, you know, the whole point about, like, the difference between I can read this and, like, mentally, like, following.
I'm five.
Plots just, and stuff.
Five's on the page.
I'm totally, you know. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Just look for the word five every time.
I got
like
that.
Like Where's Waldo, but with
five. Now I could read The Master.
Actually, there is a rule that if a child can read five words on a page, the five-finger rule, then that book is just right for them.
Really?
Yes. Well, however, it may not
yeah,
be.
Yeah, here we go.
You may need a gentle reader, not a five.
I'll go back in time.
Increasing the number of words Past on a page mark, to get to your five
you
is not
are a genius.
And a you. Five, master, and dog.
And the...
That's when you would need a gentle reader. That's when you ask a librarian for help.
That involves talking to people. I'm still bad at doing that. So, long story slightly longer. I didn't like kid things when I was a kid, although I still read comic books and I watch cartoons after school while I'm to college. Don't judge me! I found that one of the side effects of this job is that A, I'm constantly exposed to children's literature on a daily basis, and B, I work with a former children's librarian who unironically squeezed with delight when seeing a fresh batch of picture books. Mike, this is drawn by what's-his-name. He won this award at this time. Aren't you excited to read it? No. No, I'm not. So, why would we... But eventually, after about 7 years of needling, I finally did dip my toes a couple of times to Kitty Fair. I'd originally planned on talking about the award-winning novel The Giver, which she got me to finally read. But then I was like, everyone's heard of that one. One of my goals in this podcast is introducing people to new things. So instead, I'll talk about Attack of the Fluffy Bunnies by Andrea Beattie. Attack of the Fluffy Bunnies is about Kevin and Jules Rockman, a set of fraternal twins who are sent to Camp What's It To Ya by their parents for the summer. Their parents are spam enthusiasts, by which I mean the simulated meat product and not the harassing junk mail variant.
Equally, they're both equally bad.
They're both only for certain people.
Yes. Grab some spam with Velveeta, that's all right.
Her deep fried spam's pretty good, but deep fried anything's good.
That's right.
That's true.
And they're going off to the International Spamathon to be with their bad taste friends. But meanwhile, unbeknownst to the Rockmans, a meteor destroys a distant marshmallowy planet, but not before a few survivors pile into a UFO. The planet is called the Planet of the Fluffs. A fluff, which stands, of course, for fierce, large, ugly, and ferocious furballs. Looks like a 7-foot-tall humanoid rabbit with swirly, hypnotizing eyes and deadly flopping ears only used for slapping.
This is fascinating.
Are you pitching this story to us, or is this a real
This is
book?
An actual book that I spent, it's really quick read, too. It's only 150 pages. One of my favorite jokes in the book, and I'm not sure if this is going to translate well, because, you know, is that all the other planets in the solar system, in that solar system that had the Planet of the Fluffs breathe a sigh of relief that the planet is destroyed because the fluffs are real They survive, the fluffs only survive on sweet, sweet sugar, so they decide to head to Earth because, you know, childhood obesity, you know. Fortunately, there's a reason, but I don't remember now. Anyway, the twins are huge horror movie fans. They quickly notice the you know, signs that the camp counselors are starting to act a little peculiar. Like, why does the cool, hip surfer dude counselor suddenly want to talk about sugar now? Dud. They keep saying dud, you know, it's like because you can't
like
say
milk.
Dude.
Like, they made it to be dude.
Yeah, they made it to be dude, but the bunnies who possess them don't understand.
Oh, the counselor's saying dud.
Yeah,
okay.
Hey, dud.
I thought they were perhaps thinking about milk duds instead of sugar.
No, but there's a lot of sugar-based puns, so it could be also a tie-in.
Wait, this book has puns and you like it? Weird.
Yeah, you'd be surprised.
I guess all these rabbits, it's just your luck? Rabbit's foot.
Did you doesn't work when you explain
did
it.
Did you really cotton to it?
I hopped to it.
Yeah, there we go.
Anyway, to paraphrase the back cover, will they try and act like heroes of a horror movie, or will they be first to kick the bucket? Which is a nice way of saying, dot, 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 you know, dot, dot, dot.
Oh,
no. They even use, like, bun-dum-dum sometimes, and whenever they show the bunnies by themselves, it becomes like a comic book.
Wow. Oh. Man.
They say it's for fans of John Sheshka.
Oh, he's a science fiction author. Do not wait, John Sheshka. The hero Captain Underpants.
No. That's
Dave Pilkey.
Yeah, Pilkey.
So Amanda.
Okay. I don't know how I'm going to follow that.
Yeah, I'm kind of blown away over here.
So usually on the Pop Money podcast, we like to talk about books, movies, and music. Well, today I'm going to talk about a number. That's right, a number. 741 to be more exact.
Oh, yeah.
No, I'm not having a stroke. This is the Dewey Decimal Number. And in 1876, when he started classifying things, Melville Dewey assigned this number to drawing. Now, I have always loved to draw. When I was little, I'd draw with pretty much anything, on pretty much anything. Luckily, I was smart enough to avoid drawing on the walls and getting a spanking. But that was mostly where I drew the line. Anything else was pretty much fair game.
Drew the line.
Nice.
Spray painted everything.
See what you got there.
I would have gotten a spanking for that.
Out tagging.
Yeah.
Right.
Everybody needs a hobby. So I had a bunch of those how to draw so-and-so books that would give step-by-step instructions on how to draw, say, a horse or a monster. The library does have some of these books, and they're classified under, 741. Okay, sometimes it's 741.2 or 0.9, but,
I prefer 0.5.
Why is that, Mike?
Yeah, come on!
Because that is the number for drawing instruction.
I prefer 0.5973.
I like the whole section.
That's the number for comic books, Jeremy. I wonder why you would like that.
Comic books are dumb. What?
Oh, number for explanation points.
So drawing can be a pretty big section, so I'm going to give you one of my favorite how to draw books to help narrow it down. It is called Mark Kistler's Draw Squad. And my aunt brought this, she bought this for me when I was 7 or 8, and I love all the quirky drawings in it. It has lessons that teach you things like perspective and contour and shading. Now, I will admit, I could never just sit down and do the lessons in a row as they're assigned. I always cheated and looked ahead and picked out something I thought was cool whenever I got the itch. The library does have this book if you'd like to check it out and join the Draw Squad. And I don't know why as adults we stop doing the things we love as children. I've tried to keep drawing and painting whenever I have the time. Actually, for my wedding, I did a bunch of art-type project things. And I have to admit that they did contain some of the lessons I learned from Mark Kistler's Draw Squad and glitter.
I remember.
Yes, glitter got everywhere. It was exciting.
Glitter bombed your guests or something.
I did. I would do it again, too.
We're going to reaffirm our vows, guys.
That's right.
Did you really throw it at
them? I just sprinkled it in, and then when you pulled it out, then the glitter went everywhere.
Oh. The invitations were like glitter bombs. Yeah.
Oh. It was
memorable.
That was memorable.
You'll never get the stuff out for days.
No, yeah. Every time you
Brian
think
Grumble
of it, you'll
to this day.
I thought it was great.
That's why he's
So from the Draw Squad book, I'm especially good at drawing banners, you know, the long, fancy, waving in the wind banners. And even if you don't get the book to find new fun ways to draw, still check out the cover where a guy, whom I'm guessing is Mark Kistler, is rocking a great 80s stash and wearing the coolest jacket with big Crayola crayons running down the outside of the arms.
I think he had a TV show, right?
I know, it's at the pressure.
Whoa.
Oh.
This is the coolest jacket. I don't know if he had a draw.
I remember like a mustache guy that was like, hey, kids.
He had a yellow jacket with the crayons.
I think so.
I'm going to guess so.
The only drawing show I remember is Bill Cosby's show, and I'm trying to forget that.
Yeah. Oh, you didn't watch the... big hair guy with his name?
Bob Ross.
Well,
Happy Clouds.
Happy Tree.
Happy
That's
clouds,
more like
happy
in my teens, I think.
Greatest artist of all time.
Indeed.
They're a happy tree.
Where was I?
You were probably moving.
You were watching movies. You were probably working.
You were
drinking a beer and
driving cars.
Yeah. Being an adult, going outside, getting the jobs.
Yeah.
Like what you said.
Making money.
Did you ever like the or use the Ed Emberley?
I don't know that.
He's got a whole bunch of different ones, but it's like they're very cute. The art is amazing. I don't know. I can't speak to the instruction aspect of it, but it's the same thing. It's like draw this. But I always had a problem because like I'm not good at following directions. Like I can't.
See the picture and make it match.
You want to add 12 tangents to the.
Yeah. Anyway.
And Emberley actually has written a lot of great children's books, including a great read aloud called "The Go Away Big Green Monster," which is a really fun book to read. I like reading it to get the kids' reactions. So yes, that's a lot of fun. So yes, so on that note, hello. I'm going to talk about children's books that grown-ups won't hate reading. There's a reason why kids ask to have the same book read over 100,000 times. It's because they learn by repetition. And even though it drives grown-ups crazy, it helps them. But sometimes you want to read something that you're going to enjoy for you. And sometimes that's really... At my program, Bringing Books to Life, we do a lot of read aloud. So part of what I like to read aloud, the kind of children's books I like are the ones that are really great read alouds and a lot of fun. I just mentioned Go Away, Big Green Monster, which is a lot of fun. Go away, long bluish green nose. Go away, little scraggly purple hair. So it's a lot of fun. And I enjoy it for that reaction. But sometimes you want to read books that have something for you. So I asked some grown-ups that I know other grown-ups like myself, and usually it came down to things they themselves like to read. So I'm going to share with you some children's books that I have liked. So I have here, I have two in particular by the same author who's called Juju Morales. She has written two of my favorite children's books. I've given both of these to my niece. This one is called, and I have copies, I'm holding it up, doing a show and tell. I'm true to my roots. This one is called Niño Wrestles the World. This one is based on Mexican lucha libre. And it's a little boy. He's in his underpants in the front, and he's wearing a lucha libre mask. And he fights different characters from Mexican folklore, like La Llorona, yes, who is the crier, yes, La Cabeza Olmeca. And it's very, it
no
has a lot.
Chupacabra?
No, there is no chupacabra here.
Oh.
There is, but it has very much like the story reminding me of the old Batman Adam West with a pow, kapang. Oh. It has a lot of those sounds and everything. Cool. So it's a lot of fun to read. And also, who doesn't love, like, he does fight the devil.
Yeah, he fights the devil.
Yes, yeah. And then his little sisters wake up from their naps, and they're his most fearsome opponents.
Oh, no.
So this is one is a lot of fun. I will pass it around if y'all want to take a look. So that one won a Pura Belpre, I think, honor. And the Pura Belpre medal is a medal that, you know, like the Caldecott, the Newbery, but it's from the American Library Association. It's specifically given to books written by a Latino author with Latino themes. So Judy Morales herself is originally from Mexico. And this one is about Frida Kahlo. This one is called Viva Frida. And it's bilingual. It's very simple text, but the illustrations in it are unbelievable because they're done with digital puppetry.
Oh, wow.
And so you can see, I mean, like the texture on her dress, and there's like a little monkey with a key because they're looking in a box. And it's very simple, beautiful text about the power of imagination and everything. And she also combined, Juju Morales combined some of her beautiful trademark artwork. So this one is really great. I'm going to pass this one around as well. My niece loves that book, and she gets really upset if you skip over any of the Spanish. So even though her mom only speaks English, she's like, no, I have to read it in my terrible Spanish accent. So I like, so in particular, grown-ups, if you want to find a book that you will enjoy reading, ask a librarian, they will help you. But also, just sometimes we come across it, what we like as grown-ups, the kind of children's books we like reading as grown-ups, is pretty much up to our own individual taste. You may read books, fascinating sounding books about evil bunnies from outer space, which I gotta get my hands on that one.
You should, great.
And this one, it won, who's won a lot of awards, I Want My Hat Back by John Klassen. This one is about a bear who lost his hat. And he goes around asking everyone, and no one has anything to say about the hat. And eventually, it so happens, I have seen my hat.
Spoiler alert.
Yes. One of the animals he previously asked did have his hat because that lied. But it's sort of very, I Want My Hat Back by John Klassen. Really wry humor. I mean, I want my hat back. My hat is gone. I want it back. Have you seen my hat? He asked the fox. No, I haven't seen your hat. Okay, thank you anyway. And it's kind of like that. Okay. So it's a kind of sort of dry humor that adults will love. Children may not always get, but sometimes you got to read a book for yourself.
I like that one.
So yes, approved by a parent. Yeah. I want my hat back. So find some books that you may love. Bringing Books to Life has a blog, and we write a lot about different children's books. So if you're looking, you know, my God, what else can I read to my child except Llama Llama Red Pajama? Come to our blog. We will help you.
I also recommend Mo Willems.
Oh, yes. Mo Willems.
Anything with the pigeon, I'm all in.
Oh, yes. The pigeon books. It's like the pigeon finds a hot dog in particular.
Mm-hmm. Elf and Piggy.
Yes, those elephant and
not
pigeon.
Not as good as pigeon, but yes, still good.
Whoa. He also wrote Nuffle Bunny books, cautionary tale about a little girl who loses her bunny at the laundromat. Mm-hmm. And if you've ever had a child who's lost anything in public.
I left mine at the Five and Dime store in town.
Okay.
It was still there when I went back. It was an elephant. Oh.
My brother once left his blankie at the Sears in Puerto Rico. Oh. But then we went back and they had packed it up.
Oh, no.
Let's do it.
Hey, guys.
Hey, Jeremy.
Hey, guys.
Hey, Brian.
Hey, Brian.
What do we, fellas. What do we do on Tickle My Fancy?
Well, maybe the library has it.
Maybe the library doesn't.
But either way, it's Tickling My Fancy.
Murderous Jeremy.
Tickling My Fancy. This week is...
Gargling.
Do you ever have something in your throat? Tickling My Fancy this week is American Masters Loretta Lynn, Still a Mountain Girl. She was born to coal miner's daughter, and she's one of the greatest country artists of all time. So this is a documentary that originally aired on PBS on March 4th of this year.
Ladies and gentlemen, the first lady to have a motion picture made of her life. Now she is the new recipient of the Presidential Medal of Freedom. She is a coal miner's daughter, Miss Loretta Lynn.
Oh, heavens. I never thought of anything like this when I was a kid. Growing up in Butcher Holler, that's where you'll stay, you know, you thought.
Rags to Riches story of her is so true and so real. I mean, you couldn't get any more real than Butcher Holler.
My daddy could pick up anything and play it. Mommy could too. But hill people can all do it. They figure it's just a part of their life. And then when I started singing, I looked at the songbook and thought, well, heck, this is easy. So I threw the songbook down and wrote my own songs.
It is 132 minutes of cheating, drinking, loving, being poor, and every other country music topic from which you can drop the final G. And like its subject, it's never really full. It's not a cliche kind of thing. It's a story of Loretta Lynn's life, her career. There's archival footage of Loretta performing in crazy big ball gowns at the Ryman just down the street from us. There's footage of contemporary footage of her playing it down at the Ernest Tubb Record Shop. And then all kinds of stuff featuring our fair city, Nashville. There's even a shot of someone printing a poster with her name on it at Hatch Showprint, which is pretty cool. It's a loving portrait of the by God national treasure, Loretta Lynn, who sang songs like Fist City, Don't Come Home A-Drinkin' With Lovin' On Your Mind, and The Pill, a song which stirred up controversy when it was released in 1975 after being held back by her record label for 3 years because it dared to talk openly and hilariously about birth control. We usually get these documentaries on DVD, so not always, but often do. So keep your eyes peeled for it or look it up on the PBS website.
Kentucky! Bill? Okay.
I'm obviously having a hard time with the passing of George Kennedy because I want to talk about another
movie.
Do you
like your uncle or something?
I'm having a hard time. So this week I want to recommend one of his underrated movies, and it does have a cult following. It's called Thunderboat and Lightfoot, written and directed by Michael Cimino. It stars Clint Eastwood, Jeff Bridges, Jeffrey Lewis, and George Kennedy.
Let each of us study to improve ourselves.
We're good together.
You're 10 years too late.
You stick with me, kid. You're gonna live forever.
Brought back some extra goodies.
Are you out of your mind?
Hang on!
Geronimo!
Oh.
said you want to play games.
Why not do it again?
What's he mouthing off about now?
Montana Armor. We hit the same place the same way.
There it is.
That's it?
20-millimeter cannon with armor-piercing shells. At exactly 10:30, Goody, you're going to drop Lightfoot off in the alley behind the Liberty Lounge. The window's already been fixed, so you can just climb right in there and change your clothes. At 11:30, you get in the telegraph office, and you got to get in there before 11:35, because that's when the alarm goes off. You just keep quiet, nobody gets hurt, understand?
Thunderbolt and Lightfoot. That sounds like something, doesn't it?
This offbeat, odd heist film, which is set in Montana, it's part buddy movie, part road movie, where you really don't know what's going to happen next. The scene with the Dodge Charger is hilarious. I just want to recommend watching Thunderbolt and Lightfoot. It's tickling my fancy. And by the way, George Kennedy uses the F word in it, and it's hilarious. just to watch that scene. So
I got to rewatch that.
So,
huh. Yeah.
Mike?
I thought the Belcourt, they had a, was it Harmony Korine? Like, some of his favorite movies, and one of them was Thunderbolt and Lightfoot. I was like, really? Like,
oh, it's a great movie.
The Trash Humpers guy? But, anyway.
Which kind of scares me, because we like
I was like, but I like Thunderbolt and Lightfoot. So, to tie in kid stuff and horror movies, while I was eating lunch last week, I happened to overhear a coworker ask if they had ever heard of Svengoolie, to which I rapidly put down my book and explained the horror movie host. Oh, boy!
You threw a rubber chicken at him.
Yeah, exactly. To which she said, yes, he's hosting movies on MeTV every Saturday night at 9 p.m.
Yeah.
Who knew?
I knew.
Well, you know, I don't...
Really?
Sorry.
Yeah.
It's like one of these over-the-air
Yeah, it's nationally
channels.
Syndicated now.
MeTV or WeTV?
MeTV.
I know MeTV.
Yeah.
Okay.
9 o'clock.
It's pretty good.
Be there.
Friday night?
This Saturday they're doing, I think, Frankenstein vs. the Wolfman.
So, are these reruns or he's new?
He's doing them every new, live-ish, every week.
He's not the... original.
He's not the original. Yeah, apparently, the original guy retired in like 1980 or something.
But this guy's been
doing it for over 20 years now.
Officially given the mantle, from the previous guy.
Originally, he was son of Svengoolie, but apparently. Yeah.
My friend's
I did
got
research
a,
and such.
My friend's got an autographed chicken.
Yeah, apparently you could do that. Yeah. Well, I guess I'll skip some of this because I just said it.
Sorry.
You know, Svengoolie has like this cornball pun-based sense of humor, which I kind of like. Of course, because I'm me. You know, most of it's like old school movies. He's worked most of his way through the Universal horror movie catalog. It's really kid friendly. I mean, you know, during the letter segment of the episode I watched with the Hammer version of The Phantom of the Opera, there were adorable hand drawn pictures of Svengoolie and the little rubber chickens. And, you know, there's this really charming like family photo of three generations of Svengoolie fans, you know, little girl and grandpa and, you know, mom and stuff. It's like, oh, and they're like Svengoolie t-shirts. So, I mean, you know, to be perfectly honest, I'd rather have Jovah Briggs or Elvira. But Svengoolie is fun if you have kids who enjoy horror but aren't ready for The Witch. You know, or, you know, you're bored on a Saturday night. You know, you like old movie. So, yeah, good stuff. 9 o'clock. BTP. Saturdays.
Nice.
Be there and be square.
I think I'm busy. So it's still March. So I'm going to continue on with my March-tober weather madness.
Stormy night.
That's okay. I talked about George Kennedy.
March-tober.
Only 3 more weeks until it's not March anymore, so get comfortable. So this week is going to be a non-fic book about a hurricane. At the end of the 2012 hurricane season, a monster storm grew from a tropical wave centered in the Caribbean Sea. It reached Category 3 status as it crossed Cuba, but instead of strengthening, Sandy began to spread out in diameter, eventually becoming the largest Atlantic hurricane on record with winds spanning 1,100 miles. And in her book, Superstorm, 9 Days Inside Hurricane Sandy, author Catherine Miles details what happened from the genesis of the storm to its attack on the highly populated northeastern coast of the United States. So Miles' book is a good combination of science and journalism. She handles all the technical weather jargon of the hurricane's formation without letting it get bogged down in minutia. But she also put a pretty good amount of humanity in it by covering the emotional impact of the storm on the many forecasters who tried to get people out of the way in time. Miles had initially written a shorter article on, specifically on the Bounty, which was the doomed Talmash ship that tried to sail through the storm. I say tried. Spoiler alert. For Outside Magazine. And
past
this,
tense.
Yeah. This story was kind of...
I've got a sinking realization as to what happens to it.
There was a mutiny of common sense.
just waiting.
Captain Black.
Yeah. So this story was kind of the backbone of the book, and then she kind of wove the storm around it as she introduced us to the captain and crew of the ship. Now, I've mentioned a few times before that I like reading books about weather, specifically weather events that happened during my lifetime, because I can kind of look back and remember what I was doing in comparison with events in the book. My only complaint about this one is that the ending was a little abrupt. I don't really feel like Miles did the best job wrapping up all the different ends of the story. It just kind of happened, the storm hit, and then it stopped. Like, she didn't really cover much in the aftermath. Maybe because she assumes that, you know, we were all there, we knew what happened, but it still would have been good to get specific wraps up about, like, the particular people that she talked about. Not a big deal, just a nitpick on my part. Superstorm, good book.
I checked out Isaac Storm to someone the other day.
Nice!
I said, my coworker really loves this book. I'm like, oh, great, I hear it's really good.
Good, so, see, way to propagate weather.
That's right.
March, meteorological madness continues.
That's right.
Okay, so continuing on the theme of kid stuff that adults like, this is actually adult stuff in a kid format. So I'm obsessed with Bob's Burgers. I have an unnatural love of this show. I keep watching the same episodes again and again on Netflix. I mean, I've got to stop. But what would I rather watch? Reruns of Bob's Burgers. So there are no, it's not out on DVD because I checked at the public library because that's where I usually get most of my DVDs. But I did find these graphic novels of Bob's Burgers, new Bob's Burgers stories. So they're fun. They replicate the artwork. There's like Bob's sketches for new burgers of the day. Like, here's one for a fortune cookie burger with a fortune cookie in the burger. That's the concept. Some new installments of Tina's erotic friend fiction. If you're familiar with the show, Tina Belcher writes erotic fan fiction, and she moved on to erotic friend fiction because as her sister asked her, are there any shows you haven't perved up? And Tina says, no, that's why I moved on to real life. So here's one in which she's actually a real life horse, which goes on with Tina. If you're familiar with the show, with Tina's horse obsession, and she becomes, spoiler alert, an equestronaut, which is the which in the Bob's Burger world is akin to My Little Ponies. And there's a whole brownie-esque convention episode, which is also really funny. So I enjoyed these graphic novels. If you're a fan of the show, check them out. New stories, fun. I think Linda Belcher, the mom, gets a little short shrift in here because it's just letters of her writing to, you know, like the newspaper or like, hey, you know, to like a TV show. I'm like, no, I want more Linda and I want her to sing because she's ridiculous and I love her. Everyone in this family is ridiculous and I love the show, but it definitely tickles my fancy.
I got to watch this show more because I've only watched it a little bit, but every time I watch it, I think I got to watch the show more.
Oh, I've watched every episode innumerable times.
Nice. I love Tina. I love Linda. I can't get into the show, though, because my wife and I, before that show, we watched Archer, and John Benjamin does the voice of Archer, too, and he also does the voice of Bob, and their characters are completely different.
Did you see the Archer episode that was a Bob's Burgers crossover?
Where I have not seen that because I've never seen Archer.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
But, like, Archer is like a spy parody, but so the Archer is like this alpha male who's sort of like superhero invincible, but he's also like oblivious to his own like ignoramusness. But it's like a completely different character than the character of Bob. So like it's just weird dissonance, like what I watched.
Yeah, Bob is a little hapless. He's very earnest. He means well. He's a good dad, but his kids constantly make fun of him for being fat or bald. There's a whole episode in which Gene, the son, decides to become Bob. And, you know, his daughter shaves the back of his head like a bald spot, puts the hair she shaved on his arms. And she says, Louise, the one with the bunny ears. She says, I don't know how I made that arm hair look so sad, but I did it.
You could watch Dr. Katz as a bridge between the two, because John Benjamin was the voice of the son on Dr. Katz, and he plays like kind of a layabout guy on that. So, or you could listen to John Benjamin's jazz album.
No.
Oh yeah.
Bob Belcher did a jazz album.
Yeah, he learned like some rudimentary chords, and then recorded with like an accomplished jazz trio and then like plays like really terrible piano.
Makes more sense.
I heard a story about it on NPR and it's amazing. Like just a snippet, and it's like a full.
Better or worse than William Shatner singing?
Better.
Oh,
because,
oh.
Because you know that Starman or whatever. I don't know what else.
No, it's the William Shatner Rocketman.
Rocketman.
Yes. Shot that video, he had a horse accident earlier that day, so he was actually like had a concussion and high on drugs when he recorded that.
That's awesome.
And no one noticed.
All of the corrections I had actually put in the episode itself.
I have a question.
Correction.
We were talking about the Beach Boys. Mike, you said something like, hey, they've got Lowrider.
You said something about like, you know, I prefer something but not war or something.
Oh, okay. All right. Oh,
yeah. Like, Mike Love, not war.
Mike Love, not war, yes.
Okay, yeah. See, thank you. Yes. Because I thought you were saying the Beach Boys did war. Lowrider.
No.
And that war.
Yes.
Did that.
I didn't think about it in the moment, but then like when I listened to it, I thought, what?
By the time I was being clever and funny, but no one laughed, so.
Which is pretty much part of the course here. Yeah.
It's after the fact funny.
So I can't.
I give it to you, sir. I apologize for my own.
I had a question for Brian. What was your secret Easter egg? Was that you had the Golden Girls, but then it like mashed up into like ghetto hip hop?
It was Golden Girls Kesha mashup.
Like, but did you do the mashup or was it you found the mashup?
Somebody did the mashup.
Oh, I was giving you credit. I was like, that was awesome. I listened to it twice. Becca was like, what was that? I'm like, again?
That was Golden Girls Kesha mashup.
Thank you for being a friend.
One addendum, I finished that Song Machine book. The last chapter was actually all about Spotify, and it was excellent. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to talk about that again, but like how Spotify works, how people get paid, how they, you know, fight with record labels. It was very fascinating and interesting. I learned a lot of stuff. I don't think they tied it back enough to how hits work, mm-hmm. because even before Spotify, a lot of people that they profile were making hits. But anyway... Short addendum, excellent. You can learn more about how record labels steal money from artists by going to...
Nashville.
library.
Fish pass.
By going to...
www.library.nashville.org.
And our theme music is by...
Adam Dean.
Where can you go to subscribe to the podcast?
iTunes.
Anywhere else?
Or a good old-fashioned RSS feed.
Like Brian.
Great memory. You win the memory game again. And next week.
Card flipped. Oh, I don't remember.
Rivalry.
Rawr, Godzilla versus Bambi.
Somebody's on Bambi.
Which is a good movie.
Place to raise a kid. In fact, it's cold as hell. And there's no one there to raise them. If you did, and all this science, I don't understand.